squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Johannesburg, December the 21st, 5:30 p.m. Charles Starkey, a teller at the Commercial Bank's main branch in Elaff Street, is slowly but surely managing to drive his small motor car through the endless stream of rush hour traffic. Machines and drivers are both becoming overheated and temperamental, which only adds to the confusion. The busiest street, in the busiest city, in the busiest country in Africa, is no place to be at this time, the week before Christmas. Starkey steadily drives in and out of the traffic, eventually breaks clear of the slow, ponderous mass, and picks up a little speed along Louis Botha Avenue, and hurries towards the small but neat and tidy flat he shares with a friend in Orange Grove. He has shared flats and worked for banks for nearly 40 years. At 5:50, he arrives home, makes a pot of tea, and is about to sit down when the telephone rings.
Oh, no peace for the wicked. Hello. Charles Starkey speaking.
Hello, Charles. Clifford Shears. How are you keeping, old boy?
Oh, very well, thank you. Yes, and you?
Very fit indeed. I thought I'd just give you a ring, Charles, because we thought we'd be seeing you as usual, and you seem just to have disappeared.
Yes, I know. I meant to phone you before, but I've been rather busy at work. You know how it is.
Yes. I hoped I wouldn't have to mention it, but I was wondering...
The money, I know. I've been meaning to do something about it, but it's been rather difficult.
I'm sure. But it's difficult for all of us, Charles.
I'm terribly sorry.
Yes. Well, we'll leave it at that, then. And Charles.
I'm listening.
If I have to phone you again, I might not be able to be so amicable. In fact, things could get very unpleasant. Very unpleasant, indeed.
Friday, the 22nd of December. Starkey is still worrying about the telephone call. He's on an early lunch break as he walks into a bar in Commissioner Street to meet an old friend, Harold Donnelly.
Well, you're not exactly full of the joys of the Christmas season, are you, Charles?
I'm sorry, Harold. I seem to be in a spot of bother, and it's getting me down a bit.
Now, what sort of bother? Anything I can do to help?
No, not really.
Well, tell me anyway. You never know. I just might be able to suggest something.
Oh, I shouldn't think so. You remember those bridge evenings I used to go to a few weeks ago?
Oh, yes. What about them?
Well, they weren't always bridge. One evening, they decided to finish off with a few hands of poker. The next time, we switched to poker halfway through, and after that, it was poker all the time.
And you lost, I suppose?
Yes, rather heavily. They didn't ask me to play straight away, and it sort of mounted up. I stopped playing and didn't hear anything for a few weeks, and now they're pressing me to pay.
Oh, weren't you going to?
Oh, of course I was, but not just at the moment. It's a lot of money to find all at once, and I thought that perhaps...
What is it?
500 rand.
Why on earth did you have to lose that much? It seems an awful lot.
Well, the point is, well, they were all earning far more than I was, and I ended up playing for more than I could afford.
And you lost. But you were always a good poker player, weren't you? You always did pretty well in the old days, as far as I can remember.
Well, that doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter how good you are, you've got to be able to afford to ride out a losing streak. They come to everyone, good, bad, or indifferent. At those stakes, I just didn't have a chance, even though I was a far better player than most of the others.
You always were a gambler, Charles. Still, I suppose it could have happened to anyone. One of the risks of the game, huh?
Not really. Gambling's fine. Millions of people gamble all over the world. The only thing is, you must stay within your means.
I've got it. You go to your boss, tell him the problem, and get him to stake you in a game with the bank's money. You could even give him a small percentage of the winnings.
Hey, you may have something there, Harry.
What? Oh, come on now. I was only joking. You know that.
Yes, I know you were. But it might just work.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. They'd never lend you the money to go and gamble.
No, of course they wouldn't. But what if they didn't know that I was going to gamble? What if they didn't even know that I'd borrowed the money?
Now, look here. I didn't mean to give you the idea.
I know you didn't, but you did, Harold. You just did.
Saturday, the 23rd of December. At 1:15 p.m., Starkey locks up his teller's booth with an apparently perfect balance in his entry books and ledgers and R1,000 in his pockets. He meets Donnelly, and they set off by car for a house in Lower Houghton.
They usually start at 12 o'clock on a Saturday. Poker's a funny game. It's not always a good thing to join in late.
Oh, what difference does it make?
The point is, if there have been some big hands, then quite a lot of money has changed hands. Consequently, the winners don't mind betting big, because it's not really their money they're gambling with. And the losers don't mind either, because they get desperate for a big win and overplay the value of the hands.
I see. So the game roughens up a bit.
That's right. And if you've just sat down, you're caught up in a far bigger game than you thought, with everyone throwing money around like water.
It sounds to me as though you shouldn't be going at all.
Oh, nonsense, Harry. I've got to try something. I may as well be hanged for a sheep as a lamb.
Cigarette?
No, thanks.
Are you sure they won't mind me coming?
Oh, no. They won't mind at all. They're not sharks. They're perfectly ordinary, nice people. They just happen to play poker for rather large stakes, that's all.
What about the money you owe them?
Oh, I don't owe any money here. No. This is a different school altogether. I haven't been here for ages. I had to phone them up to see if they were still playing and when.
And today's the day, eh?
That's right, Harry. Today's the day.
The two men arrive at the house where a poker game is already in progress. Charles Starkey sits in while his friend watches. But Starkey's luck doesn't change, and he starts to play recklessly, hoping for a lucky break.
See, Jackson.
Sorry, Mr. Starkey. I've got three kings.
Two pairs. Aces high.
It's yours. Take it. Full house. Queens and tens.
I've got four nines. What a lovely sight.
A king flush.
A king flush wins. I'm sorry, gentlemen. I'm afraid I'm finished.
Three p.m., Wednesday, the 27th of December. At Radio Police Headquarters, Brixton, Police Constable Holmes is on duty and receives an emergency telephone call from the manager of the Commercial Bank.
Police Constable Holmes speaking.
Good afternoon, Constable. My name's Reynolds. I'm the manager of the Commercial Bank in Elof Street.
Yes, Mr. Reynolds. Can I help you?
Well, I'm afraid that one of our tellers hasn't come back from his lunch break, and it's beginning to look as though he doesn't intend to. The fact of the matter is, I had cause to speak to this person about the disappearance of a considerable sum of money only this morning.
Oh? How much was that, sir?
R1,000, of which, incidentally, he denied all knowledge. We didn't call the police in straight away. It's company policy to try and settle these matters internally, if it's at all possible.
Yes, sir, I understand.
Not very good publicity for us, you see. However, the whole business has obviously now got beyond my control.
Very well, sir. I'll get someone over to you right away. Mr. Reynolds of the Commercial Bank, Elof Street, wasn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
Right. You don't happen to have the teller's name and address handy, do you? It might save us a bit of very valuable time.
See, the thunderclouds are building up again over there. They always do when the cricket's on.
Control to car 29. Control to car 29. Come in 29. Over.
Receiver control. Over.
State your position 29. Over.
We're travelling south along the main Pretoria-Joburg Road, just approaching the turn-off to Sandringham by the Esplanade Cinema. Over.
Proceed to flat 124 Studio Mansions, 14th Street, Orange Grove. 124 Studio Mansions, 14th Street, Orange Grove. This is the home address of Charles Starkey, a bank teller. He's wanted for questioning in connection with the disappearance of some money from the Commercial Bank in Elof Street. If he isn't there, just see what information you can pick up as to his possible whereabouts. Over.
We're nearly there already, Control. We'll keep you informed. Over.
That is all, 29. Over and out.
I don't know, Dick. Even the bank tellers are pinching the money these days. Where the heck can you put it?
3:17 p.m. Police Constables Fenter and Weir, in car 29, arrive at Starkey's address, but there is no one in the building who can shed any light on his possible whereabouts. At 3:25, Detective Lieutenant Kenneth Brenton arrives at the Commercial Bank, where he interviews several members of the staff, including the manager.
This is number 4, where he usually worked, but I don't suppose you'll be able to tell very much from looking at it.
I'd still like to have a quick look inside, if you don't mind, Mr. Reynolds.
Not at all. I've got a master key here somewhere. Ah, yes, here we are. There we are. I'm afraid there's not much to see, really, is there? In any case, we know who the thief is already. Not as if we've got to look for clues or anything like that.
A few clues as to where he might have gone would come in rather handy at the moment. Unless you have any idea.
No, of course not. I'm sorry, Lieutenant, I shouldn't try and teach you your job.
It's all right, sir. But it was worth looking in here, just in case he left something lying around.
Yes, of course. Would you like a cup of tea, Lieutenant?
Oh, thank you very much, sir.
Oh, let's go through to my office. Unless you'd rather stay here for a while longer.
No, let's go through. There's some more questions I'd like to ask you anyway. I must say that banks have certainly undergone quite a revolution in the last 10 years.
Well, they have. Very different from when I did my training. Nowadays, the accent's all on brightness rather than solidarity, on youth rather than the old staid bank workers of the past. Come on inside.
Oh, thank you.
Mind you, there doesn't seem to be anything old and staid about Mr. Starkey's performance, does there?
This does appear to be a straightforward case of stealing the money and fiddling the books.
Yes, absolutely. He obviously did it last Saturday, and it was first discovered this morning because of the Christmas holiday.
Hmm.
Not that it makes any difference, as he was here this morning. When the matter was drawn to my attention, he denied everything, but he looked so guilty, I don't know why I even pretended to believe him.
Excuse me, sir. Could I have a word with you?
Rather busy at the moment, Mr. Tyrone. This is Lieutenant Brenton.
I know, sir. That's what I wanted to speak to you about. Mr. Starkey did relief duty at my foreign exchange counter during my break.
Oh, what about it?
Well, I've just been cashing up, sir. And there's a whole lot of traveller's checks missing, sir. About 12,000 rands worth.
p.m. Lieutenant Brenton is joined at the bank by Detective Sergeant Ace, who takes down the official statements concerning the theft, leaving Lieutenant Brenton free to question bank employees on the possible whereabouts of Starkey.
I just wanted to talk to you about Mr. Starkey, Mr. Tyrone. We were mainly concerned with your report on the missing money before, and I didn't really have a chance to ask you how well you knew him.
Well, not very well at all, sir. I hardly ever saw him outside the bank. I'm a married man, and he's a bachelor. I suppose we didn't move in the same sort of circles. I'm beginning to understand why now.
Didn't he ever talk to you about any little personal matters? You know the type of thing, I mean. Interests, hobbies, places or events that he'd been to, anything like that?
No, never. He seemed to be, he seemed to keep very much to himself.
Mm. Wait.
I did go to a bar with him one lunchtime. We met a friend of his there. I think he may have gone there quite a lot. I seemed to know him there anyway.
Can you remember the name of his friend?
No, not a chance. I'm not sure that he even introduced us properly. But I do remember that he seemed to be a nice enough chap. It's not a great deal of help, though, is it?
No, Mr. Tyrone, it's not. Perhaps we'll have better luck with the name of the bar.
Yes. Yes, it was a Toby in Commissioner Street. It's a fairly new place, I think.
Yeah, right you are, Mr. Tyrone. That'll be all for now. Thanks for your help. And do you know where your manager is?
No, there he is, by the teleprinter.
Oh, yes. Good night, Mr. Tyrone.
Good night, Lieutenant.
Leaving now, Mr. Reynolds. I'll just see if young Ace is ready.
Well, let's go over here where it's quiet. I don't suppose our system will help much in this case, but if he still hasn't been found after a few days, it might pay dividends then.
Which system is that?
We have a record of the numbers of all the travellers' checks that Starkey took. These numbers are now being circulated to all the main branches in the country. From there, they'll eventually reach every other bank, no matter how small, in a bulletin.
You mean every commercial bank in the country?
No, I mean every bank. There's a combined bankers' agreement whereby all bank checks on robberies of this nature, no matter whose company the money was stolen from. The numbers will also be forwarded to every central clearinghouse in every city. There's a very good chance that if anyone tries to cash one of those checks, it'll be spotted as being one of those stolen, long before it's cleared back to us.
Yes, I see what you mean. Might come in very handy indeed.
I gather you didn't find out much about Starkey. Sorry we couldn't be of more help.
Well, don't worry about that, Mr. Reynolds. We're not doing too badly. We know the wanted man's name. We We have a photograph from your files. We know his address. And we know one or two places he used to visit. May not sound much to you, but an organization like the police force doesn't need much. We'll get him.
...7:15 p.m. Lieutenant Brenton leaves Detective Sergeant Ace to conclude his report on the stolen traveler's checks and walks round to the Toby Bar in Commissioner Street. The staff there recognize Charles Starkey's face from his photograph, but none of them knows anything about him. He then drives out to Orange Grove, where he meets police constables Fenter and Weir. They've already questioned several people in the block of flats and nearby shopkeepers, but have learned very little. Leaving Weir in car 29, which is now parked in the shadows a little way down the road, Brenton and Fenter now go up to the flats and force their way in.
There's a few clothes strewn around on the floor by the wardrobe over here, sir.
Yes. Looks as though someone packed a case in rather a hurry, doesn't it? Did you say there were two men sharing here?
Yeah, but the superintendent said that the other one's gone away on a month's leave. Apparently only left a few days ago.
Yeah. I don't think we need to stay here much longer, Constable.
Have you found anything, sir?
No, nothing. Haven't even touched anything. But I've seen plenty. One unmade bed. That'll be Starkey's if his mate's away. And look over here at the bedside table. Cards. Dice. Old race cards. And look at these books here. Percentage play. Scarn on cards. Focus on gambling. This gentleman certainly does his homework. Still, if he has to steal money for it, then he ought to do a bit more. And I should think he'll have plenty of time for that when we catch up with him.
That's no lie.
I wonder where he is, though. What about you, Fenter? Where would you go?
Good morning, sir. You see anything in the window that you will fancy? I've got some lovely copper bracelets with a Durban crest.
I was looking at one of those watches earlier on.
Oh, certainly, sir. Just come inside, would you?
The only trouble is I've only got traveller's checks. You don't mind cashing traveller's checks, do you?
Oh, not at all, as long as they're not for too much. How much did you have in mind then, sir?
At 2.50 p.m. on Thursday, the 28th of December, the proprietor of Parboo's souvenir shop banks his past 24 hours takings. An hour later, at 3.50 p.m., the numbers on the three travelers' checks that he has cashed for Starkey are noticed.
Hey, hang on a minute, man. These are on our stolen list. Get through to the police right away.
Police, Constable Vernon speaking. Can I help you?
Hello, Lieutenant Brenton speaking. You have? When? Durban, eh? Yes. Yes, I think I'd better.
Lieutenant Brenton catches the evening plane to Durban, but all attempts to contact Parboo are of no avail. At 8.30 a.m. on Friday the 29th of December, Brenton is driven down to the souvenir shop by Constable Phillips.
It's not much further now, sir. Just down at the bottom of West Street on the right-hand side.
You a gambling man, Phillips?
Well, I like the odd flutter now and again, sir. You have to if you live in Durban, what with the July, and then there's a jackpot every week. Makes for a bit of interest. Why do you ask, sir?
Well, the man we're looking for is a more serious type of gambler than your kind.
Oh, you mean he's a professional?
No, that's not what I mean. He's a more serious type because he gambles with other people's money. Stolen money. I want you to make up a list for me of all the places where someone could go to win or lose money. Tracks, clubs, anywhere.
I'll do my best, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. What can I do for you?
We're police officers. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Oh, yes. What's it about?
You cashed some traveler's checks yesterday.
Yes, I did, but that's not unusual for me. I often do it.
Do you recognize this man? Show him the photo, Phillips.
Certainly.
Oh, yes. Yes, I do know him. Definitely.
Harbu can do little more than positively to identify the man who signed the checks in the name of Morgan as Starkey. This he does by means of the bank's photograph, which Brenton has had printed. He now circulates copies to all the bars, clubs, and hotels in the Durban area. The banks are all requested to keep an even sharper lookout for the stolen traveler's checks and to alert the police immediately if any turn up. Lieutenant Brenton and two other plainclothes men from Durban CID spend the evening visiting some of the places where Starkey might appear to try and cash traveler's checks. Clubs, hotels, and so on. They hand out several copies of the wanted man's photograph. Although several people think they may have seen Starkey, they don't succeed in making any direct contact. 2:15 p.m., Saturday the 30th of December. Constable Vernon is on duty at radio headquarters.
Police, Constable Vernon speaking.
This is Babu from the souvenir shop on the parade.
Yes, Mr. Babu.
Lieutenant Brenton asked me to phone if I saw Mr. Starkey again. Well, he just come in to try and cash some more checks.
Good. Thanks, Mr. Babu. Is he still there?
No, sir. I told him I was short of cash at present, but that I'd have some coming in from another branch fairly soon if he'd like to call back.
Good thinking, Mr. Pavel. Did he seem suspicious at all?
I don't know, sir. It's hard to tell, but I watched him go across the road into the fun fair. I think he's still there. Control to car 40. Control to car 40. Come in 14, over.
Car 14 to control. Receiving you. Go ahead. Over.
Do you have Lieutenant Brenton from Johannesburg with you? Over.
Yes, we do. He's riding with us in the car now. Over.
Proceed immediately to the amusement park on Marine Parade. The section opposite Barbu's. The man you're looking for is there. Over.
Tell him we're on our way. Ask him to come and bring some more men down. That fun fair's a big place. Over and out.
At the amusement park, it is exceptionally hot, with the sun blazing down on the vivid reds, greens, blues, and yellows of the gaudily painted rides and stalls, which never seem to be empty for an instant. The noise of the machinery of dodgems, whips, big wheel, motorboats, and the pleasure seekers is topped only by the deafening fairground music, from which there is no escape. The fair is packed with a teeming, shirt-sleeved crowd in holiday mood, which could make an arrest very difficult. Brenton has a quick word with Pabu, and he and Phillips remain at that end of the fair in case Starkey should return to the shop. Meanwhile, reinforcements arrive and search the teeming crowds with practiced eyes.
It's like looking for a needle in a haystack. Are you sure he's going to come back to this point?
I think so. I should be very surprised if he doesn't.
Lieutenant, here!
What? It's him, sir! Come on!
Hey, what's
look out!
Excuse me, please.
Hey, who do you think you're pushing?
There we are. Brago, stop that man!
Oh, what? Oh, no, you don't. You leave me alone. All right. Let me get up, please. I won't give you any trouble.
All right, Phillips. Well done. Let him go now.
Thank you.
That's it, Starkey. The fun's over now.
Starkey pleaded guilty to charges of stealing 13,000 rands in cash and traveler's checks. Of this amount, 10,980 rands was recovered. Starkey was sentenced to 2 years imprisonment for theft and agreed that on his release, he would pay the money that he had spent back to the bank in installments, dependent upon his ability to find suitable employment.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of squad cars.
Listen again next Friday evening to another dramatic story in our authentic South African police series, Squad Cars. Squad Cars is directed by Colin Fish and produced by David Goodman.